Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking to Paul Porter. A lot of you know him as the Capitan Paul Porter. He's written a book about the radio and music industry. It's titled Blackout, My 40 Years in the Music Business. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, Paul, I was asking about what happened to black radio. Go ahead and finish your point.
Yeah, I think, you know, it made a lot of changes due to consolidation. You know, the Telecom Act of 96 was the big change where, you know, stations that were mom and pop owned in certain markets all sold out to big corporations like Clear Channel, which is now iHeart. So when you go from owning 90 stations in 96 to 1,200 stations 3 years later, what do? You mimic what you're doing, you syndicate voices, and you come out with this formula. And who says their formula is right, but it's on 1,200 stations? And then you do the same thing at at other big companies, Cumulus, Radio One, and it's all to save money. And I dig that, but it's also hurt the product.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Gary, calling from D.C. What's on your mind, Gary?
Yes, my name is Gary Hatter from Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Capitan, what would be the number one piece of advice you would give for a new up-and-coming jock, say, at the age of 57?
At 57, I say, don't do it. Get a blog. Get to writing. But, it's hard to break in. Everybody thinks they're going to be a broadcaster. But, it takes time. And at that age, there's not too many gigs open for you, man. There's age prejudice in radio.
Mm.
Okay, well, just remember that name, Gary Hatter. You'll hear from me again.
All right, well, Gary, thank you so much. Speaking of which, talk to me about the impact of first of all, iTunes. I know that when iTunes, first hit the business world, it really did transform music. CDs just weren't around for very long after iTunes.
It's turned into a singles-based market. You know, people buy one song, and the same thing with streaming. Look at streaming. Nobody buys records anymore. Drake had the biggest year of everybody, and it was all due to, downloads. That's where everybody makes the money. On streaming, I should say, not downloads, but streaming. Everybody wants to listen for free, and that model has killed the music industry. And, you know, I fought on Capitol Hill for performance rights for artists because artists can't make money anymore selling records. There are no more platinum records. There are very few, and the industry's changed and then turned into a singles-driven market. One song and you're done.
Talk to me a little bit about internet radio. It seems, with a hat tip to our friend Gary, that everybody's got an internet radio show.
And they do.
And
but
it's amazing
to internet
me.
Radio is that everybody has one. And, I do every interview I can, and some internet stations have 8 listeners. Another have 20, another might have a couple hundred or 1,000, but there are a lot of choices out there, and it's hard. It's really hard, internet radio, and you have to pay royalties on the music you play. And yes, they have different rates for, different listenership, but it's not as easy as everybody thinks, and I call it play radio when you have an internet radio station.
Mm. So, and so with that said, how does radio stay relevant?
I think it does when it attacks local issues and talks to the community and plays music that, just like, HUR, they have a Washington feel. if you're from D.C., you know how to tune in. But the younger stations, that's where they're losing a lot of the edge, because young kids aren't tuned into radio like they are. They might listen to the Breakfast Club, but they're streaming. They're in their phones, so it's a, you know, it's going to be harder for radio to hold on to listenership as people age and grow. But luckily, you know, there's time to make adjustments.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Paul Porter, the author of the new book, Blackout, My 40 Years in the Music Business. You also talk about the industry, the music industry's dark side, and I'm assuming you're not just talking about the impact on radio, but the performance industry, the musicians.
Oh, the artists, man, they are a dying breed, man. Computers have killed live music, and you know, a lot of folks with a lot of talent, man, are lost in production studios, and they've made it, you know, I remember when they were always big groups, you know, the LTDs, the New Bursts, and, you know, but now it's easier to have little Yachty go around with one person and a track than have a band like Mint Condition. So that's where the industry's saving money on, and the, you know, samples have taken a lot of the great artistry out of the music, and yeah, it's painful to see what's happened, because you know, in our culture and people of color's culture, man, black music has meant so much, man. It was the voice of, you know, the civil rights movement and so many other things, but it's lost a lot of the roar over the last 20 years, that's for sure.
You know, you make an interesting point. I was just kind of, you know, thinking back to, and I'm sure you remember, what was called the Sound of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It, you know, that Gamble and Huff, you know, 70s sound, those soaring violins and, you know, that kind of, you know, mellow bass and percussion. But to reproduce that the way that it was done back then, you really make an interesting point. We're talking about how many violins? Five,
yeah,
or ten,
yeah,
in a recording studio, as opposed to just having a Yamaha keyboard and reproducing that electronically with just, you know, one person, or like you said, you know, with a track, but it still isn't quite the same.
Yeah, it's not. There's not the feeling. And plus, you don't get to see those great tours. You know, I know a couple of weeks ago they had the Jazz Fest, and that was sold out. And people love live music, but if you're 17 or 18 years old, you don't know what a band is, because you don't see a band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember growing up and seeing Graham Central Station and the Ohio Players and knowing everybody in the band for the instruments that they play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, time has taken musicians out of the game, and they've added, you know, the young thugs of the world. and hip-hop, I love hip-hop. I just want balance. You know, we went from lyricist to the lyrically challenged, that's what I say. And it's painful to hear some of the things that the younger kids are growing up on.
Interesting. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Paul. Paul calling from Maryland. Paul, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I wanted to talk to Paul Porter. I remember when I came to this country in 1981. 82, he started at WHI. He had this program called the In-Flight Concert, and he really turned me on to Donald Bart. I didn't know anything about Donald Bart until I started listening to him. And then I left and went to California, and I met Angela Winbush, and she told me she was one of Donald Bart's students. So I wanted to thank him.
Oh, yeah, it was Night Flight, man. Those were good days, man. It was a good time musically. I used to talk to Angela when she broke up with Renee. That's funny you mentioned Angela Winbush. I hope she's doing well.
Yeah, well, Paul, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. 319-7810. Paul, who was your greatest influence?
Well, I think it was my mom, man, and those 45s that used to sit in the living room. You know, I'm Trinidadian descent, and, you know, from the Calypso records to Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell, that meant a lot for me. Donnie Simpson was a big factor in bringing me here to D.C., and, you know, I learned a lot at different stations in Washington, and I'm thankful. You know, I say things about Kathy Hughes in a book, but she gave me a shot to program a radio station that, you know, I took from zero to number four in the market. I got fired, but, you know, I appreciate all my experiences, and it's brought me to this point where I'm quite happy. I own my own radio station now here in Orlando. It's LPFM. It's called The Wire 98.5. And, you know, something I wanted to do, to be my own boss. And it's taken all this time to get here, but I'm here, and I'm quite happy about it.
What's different now that you're on the other side?
Making money. You know, trying to find people. I don't have a Jeanette in sales, or, you know, there's nobody leading the charge. And it's just hard, you know, competing against big corporations that can, you know, give people spots for free on four or five stations. And that's what people don't understand when, you know, conglomerates own five or six stations in a market. They can outprice competition. I know your sales team battles that all the time. But, you know, when you have a winning product, you can still make money.
Mm-hmm. And I've got a little bit of breaking news here that I wanted to share with our listeners. As we spoke about this earlier, the Philadelphia 76ers have indeed picked DeMatha's own, Prince George's County's own, Markelle Fultz, as the number one NBA draft pick. So we certainly salute him. A lot of people, looking forward to this young man who, you know, some could argue could be the next LeBron James. So, you know, very, very good news for him. Congratulations. When you talk about, you know, the I was talking about the business. I said, who was your biggest influence in the business? Who had the biggest impact, you know, outside of your family?
Well, you know, like I said, man, I got to work with some great people. Donnie Simpson, Kathy Hughes, Bob Johnson, you know, Jim Watkins. This, I've had an all-star cast of people. A guy named Sonny Joe White, who started me in Boston, man, who was one of the first, you know, so-called urban jocks to cross over. So I've had some great teachers, and I've learned from all of them, you know, over the course of time, and that's been a real blessing. And the people that you get to work with at radio stations, it's really a nice family atmosphere. It was for a long time for me. So there's a lot of familiar faces. Tracy Luttrell, I gave her first job on 4th and 8th Street.
So, yeah, our music director here.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, you know, I remember and get to work with a lot of good people, and it's nice to see people grow over the course of time.
Going to take a break real quick. When we come back, more conversation with Paul Porter, author of the new book, Blackout, My 40 Years in the Music Business. Paul, think about this question. When we come back, what was your worst mistake? We'll talk about that. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment.
If you really knew me.
If you...
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking to Paul Porter, veteran radio jock in the business, also known as the Capitan Paul Porter. He's written a book about the industry. It's titled Blackout, My 40 Years in the Music Industry. If you have a question or comment for Paul, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Paul, I asked before the break, what do you think your biggest or worst mistake was in the business?
I think it was enjoying the party in life in the 80s.
Okay.
You know, I wouldn't trade it, but it set me back. It said, instead of set me forward, you know, now that I'm older and wiser. But, I mean, D.C. was just a fun place in the 80s, man. I used to hang out with Sugar Ray and this. Anyway, man, it was a good time, but it burned out some brain cells, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost out on some good experiences, too, by being a little cocky and, you know, moving around. But, you know, I wouldn't trade it. It's made me who I am.
Talk to me about indie artists. And this is, you know, why I bring this up. Back in the 80s, there were, you know, indie artists that went by the names of Jay-Z, for example. And, you know, the man we know now as, you know, Puff Daddy. Those were indie artists, you know, selling, you know, CDs or even cassettes.
Yeah, Master P sold CDs out of his trunk and built an empire.
Yeah, but now our indie artists don't seem to rise to the same level of success.
Because they don't have the money.
Mm.
You know, before you could break a song out of D.C., you know, you could. Look, there was a time I managed Lettucey. WHUR played Lettucey for me. This, I think it's 98 or 99. We sold 100,000 records in D.C. And it didn't cost me a dime because WHUR played good songs and, you know, for a good reason. But that doesn't happen anymore. There are just a handful of WHURs that play good music for a reason, and it doesn't happen in the world of hip-hop. Everybody has their pockets out.
You know, it's funny when you talk about, you know, budding artists and folks starting out. I remember, I guess it was around 2005, I was in South Beach on a Humble, just decided to go. And if you know anything about South Beach, you know, there's that long shopping area called Lincoln Plaza, and it's north of Ocean Drive.
Yeah, I know exactly.
And I remember, you know, I was walking down, and there was this lady with some, you know, with CDs, and she was signing, you know, CDs, and there was, you know, nobody around her, and I remember walking up and, you know, just kind of talking to her for a little while, and I bought one of her CDs just because she was pretty.
Uh-huh.
And right before, you know, I walked away, I said, "What's your name again?" And she said, "Rihanna."
Really?
And yeah, it was Rihanna. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And I remember years later, I was, you know, when she first, you know, blew up. And I said, "That's the same woman who I bought a CD from in Lincoln
Wow.
Plaza." And it's just amazing that you can come from virtual obscurity to...
But Harold, that's one in a million.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't know the grind that she put in and the people that worked. You know, everybody talks about success stories, but we never know. And that's what my book has in it. It gives you examples of this, some of the work that is needed to reach, you know, it took Drake like 10 years before he broke. He was an actor and had great people working along with him. Success doesn't happen overnight in this business. And, you know, folks have to realize it. And that's a great story about Rihanna, but she's one out of, look, 98% of records at a major record company fail. They make all their money off of a couple of songs
mm-hmm.
and streaming. So it's not a success story with artists anymore. And these artists don't last long. They, you know, their shelf life is not like the OJs or Mays and Frankie Beverly, where they're going to be touring. You know, the Drams and the Little Yachties, they're hot, and the Migos, but who knows where they're going to be 3 or 4 years from now.
And it's interesting you say that, because when Mary J. Blige first came out, and, you know, she had that, you know, the video with the baseball cap and the, you know, the knee socks and, you know, and I even remember saying she's not going to be around for long. And she was just here in D.C., a week and a half or so ago. And she's still, you know, she's still doing her thing. So how is it that you have people like Mary J. Blige who have been able to survive? Is it the Ray Ray Charles thing where they own their masters and they are the...
No, but I think Mary J. has a lot of hits that have let her, you know, just become a star. I mean, when you think of Mary J., she has 10 or 15 hits. And mm-hmm. when you have that, you can tour. Look, let me tell you a quick story.
Sure.
So up on my Facebook page, there's a page called Blackout the Book on Facebook. So I know Snoop, and he took a picture with my book, and I posted the picture up, and somebody contacted me that I know today and said, look, I want to get Snoop for a date in Egypt. This happened early this morning. And they want to pay $125,000 in August. So I hit Snoop up, and he says, man, I'm going to make $100,000 in downtown L.A. Why am I going to Egypt? And Snoop ain't had a hit in 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, he's cooking with Martha Stewart. Imagine that.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's great when you're a super artist. I can't imagine. I'd go to Afghanistan for $100,000 at least for a day or two. But he was like, look, man, the least I go overseas for is $250,000.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, it must be nice. But those are those stories that you seldom hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why Chuck D wrote credits on the back of my book. Chuck's in Germany and Europe for a month. And a guy like Chuck D, as great as Chuck D is, he's not getting $100,000 per show. Nothing close. And that's who we have to think about, too. You know, all the artists, not just the super-duper ones like Mary J. Blige.
So how do artists in 2017 and beyond get, aside from being talented, how do they break through? Is it a quote-unquote overnight success?
No, it's... Harold, look, man, I put a site together about 6 years ago. It's called RapRehab.com. And this is a music business. And everybody worries about the music side, but nobody takes care of the business. And Blackout the Book, that's what I talk about, that there's a business side. And you got to do your homework to protect your rights. You know, I always tell everybody the first thing you need beside a hit record is a hit lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's some great lawyers in Washington, D.C. that have come right out of Howard. But you got to make that investment on the business side and to do some reading and studying. This is the only art form that people think they don't have to work. If you're going to be... You know, the number one draft pick, you got to put in a lot of work over the years. It didn't happen overnight for him.
And how about a good accountant with a background in tax law with the IRS?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. And that's why you see these stories of artists making some money and then they're broke. You know, they're Tevin Campbell sleeping in cars, or, you know, Jodeci, who had tough times due to other factors. But there's a lot of folks that, you know, this industry's not good at, and they don't take time to, you know, teach you, but you got to make time to teach yourself. And that's why I wrote this book. And make sure you go to blackoutthebook.com to get it, man. I'll sign it and send it, man. I think my book, Harold, not only helps music folks, but it helps parents deal with a culture they don't know about.
Explain that real quick. I've got about a minute left.
Some of the stories in there, parents are disconnected from their 18-year-olds because they listen to one station and their kids listen to something else. So if they don't get hip-hop, they can't have a nice conversation about the content. And they wonder why, you know, their kids are growing up with this different attitude, this me-first attitude. But the music is about bling, misogyny, sex, and violence. Mm-hmm. And if you get that on a steady diet and don't understand the industry and that it's force-fed to you, you're in trouble. So that's why I do a lot of lectures around the country, and my biggest problem is parents not caring or not knowing. And I know they love their children, but they let them do anything they want, and then they wonder why the attitude towards women and calling people B and ho and this and that happens. And, you know, this can be controlled, so it takes work on both ends.
Well, Paul Porter, it was really great to talk to you. I'm glad to see that you are, you know, still hanging in there doing your thing. The book is called Blackout, My 40 Years in the Music Business. Capitan Paul Porter, again, thank you so much.
Oh, man, it's been nice, man. Love D.C. too, boy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Thursday, June 22nd. You can follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or Daily Drum WHUR. I'm Harold Fisher. Stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.